Bills running away now.
You're listening to the best of the Bills.
Touchdown, the first play from scrimmage.
A weekly mix of WGR 550's best NFL talk to get you ready for game day.
Live, presented by Kaleida Health.
Back here for hour number two, Chris Brown, Matty Glab joining you, and we'll catch up with NFL Network national reporter Cameron Wolf in just a little bit. But we want to knock out some more questions from the OBL fan mailbag before we catch up with Cameron. And large Tim Hortons asks, who is worth? Yeah, I know, I like that. It's a pretty good handle for social media. Who is working on the Bills' uniform look, upgrades, combos, and helmets? We all miss the standing red buffalo. Can we hear what's in store for the on-the-field look for the 25-26 World Champions? We do know that the rivalries uniforms are going to be issued, not only for Buffalo, but a number of other teams, to be debuted in rivalry games. So it's the AFC East, and then it's, I want to say, the NFC West that's doing the rivalry uniforms?
I think so.
Yeah, so there's two divisions that are being debuted with rivalries uniforms, and they'll be worn in at least one game, maybe two. And so those two divisions will have, like, alternate uniform head to toe. Like, it's going to be, everything's going to be different. They have not been unveiled yet, I don't think. Have they?
No, they have not been unveiled yet. It's with the NFC West. I'm pulling up an old email about it.
Yeah.
And I remember we learned the uniforms are all going to model the hometown that the team is from. So
there'll be a theme to that.
Yes, there's going to be a theme to why these uniforms represent Buffalo and what Buffalo is about.
So that'll be worn, presumably, in a division game at some point in time, to be announced at a later date. So I would say stay tuned for that. As for, you know, some of the throwback stuff that people like so much, I would say wait until we're in the new stadium. And then it wouldn't shock me if in year one in the new stadium, there's something in store there. I don't know that for a fact, but I think if we're kind of putting our heads together, it wouldn't shock me if we find some kind of element with the uniform in, you know, a throwback week scenario or something like that. That's when I would anticipate something of that nature coming down the pike. But we do know the rivalries uniform ensemble will be happening for one game this season, at the very least. So hopefully that's enough to chew on until we get to something more.
It's one new thing.
Yeah, and I'm really curious to see how they incorporate, you know, what Buffalo is into the uniform design. Tim on the mailbag asks, what player would surprise you the most if they made the team, and what player would surprise you the most if they were cut from the team? Wow, that's a tough one.
Projecting before training camp.
And with a lot of, I mean, 90 players on the roster, I would say a non-surprising, or what would surprise you the most if they made the team? It would probably be a guy that's deep on the depth chart at a loaded position. So whether that's, you know, like tight end, like a Zach Davidson or a Kaliki Latu, who's, you know, an undrafted rookie, you know, or Frank Gore Jr. or Darrington Evans at running back. I mean, good players, certainly capable of playing in this league, but, you know, you got James Cook, Ray Davis, you know, and Ty Johnson in front of you, it's hard to crack the roster.
Yeah.
So those are some names you could probably put out there. You can put a Caden Prather out there, you know, nice looking young rookie wide receiver, but a guy that in all likelihood, unless there's a rash of injuries there at the beginning of the season, is probably going to have to toil on the practice squad.
One that I thought about was Daquan Hardy.
Right.
Brandon Codrington kind of took over that role as the primary returner during the season, and Hardy is somebody who has contended for that role and continues to do so through OTAs and mandatory minicamp. But the fact is, you also have a wide receiver now taking part in that competition, and Laviska Shenault, who has had success doing so before and who could be a good addition to the wide receiver room. Mm-hmm. Joe Brady talked about knowing what Laviska Shenault was about during college football and how big of a name he was coming into the NFL and trying to get that out of him in Buffalo. Daquan Hardy is somebody who is kind of down on the pecking order in the cornerbacks room. You have a packed secondary. You think about fighting it out for the returner role, but then can you add to the cornerbacks room? And if not, are you adding to the special teams anywhere else? And it's hard to make a roster if you're not checking the box yes in those categories.
Yeah, and I mean, even thinking about some of Buffalo's draft choices, like Chase Lunt, for example, at the offensive tackle position, I mean, in front of him are obviously the two starters, Spencer Brown and Deion Dawkins. But then you have Tylan Grable, who won the swing tackle position as a rookie last year. And then you still have Ryan Vandermark. I mean, there's four guys in front of him before he even steps on the field. And even then, he's competing with like a Richard Garage and other guys. So that's a tough ladder to climb, especially as a rookie. And you know, you look at Buffalo's draft class and it's like, man, it's going to be hard for Caden Prather. It's going to be hard for Chase Lunt and probably a few others. But it's a hard roster to make. So, who's going to shock me if they're cut? I don't know. Like, you can name any guy you're expecting to make the lineup or make the starting lineup, I should say, on either side of the ball and come up with somebody pretty quickly. Ed asks, which position groups are the ones to closely watch in training camp?
Well, there's the obvious in the true position battles that are happening. That's cornerback two, opposite of Christian Benford. How is that looking with a rookie in Maxwell Hairston and Tre'Davious White coming back to the roster, as well as Dane Jackson, who have both spent time in Buffalo before? There's the safety position. It's Damar Hamlin and Cole Bishop fighting it out for a starting spot. And then there's the defensive line position group, where there's so many new players a part of that group that you're just watching how are these guys gelling and how are they mixing and matching on certain down and distances as we see training camp practices take place and 11 on 11 drills happen.
Yeah, like is Joey Bosa only coming on in long down and distance situations to indicate he might only be used as a pass rush specialist? Is someone challenging A.J. Epenesa for his base defense, you know, rundown role on maybe first and second down? You know, is Landon Jackson entering the equation there at all to challenge him for that role? And I don't think it's really, you know, is somebody challenging Daquan Jones, you know, in the one technique spot next to Ed Oliver, you know, now being 34 years old in the last year of his contract. So I think there are more positions up for grabs, so to say, on the defensive side of the ball than on the offensive side, where I think we largely expect the offensive line to remain the same. And, you know, outside of maybe one wide receiver role, I mean, if they keep six wide receivers, you're arguably going to be having five or six receivers fighting for that one spot, because I think the pecking order, at least in terms of contract size awarded to free agents, is pretty clearly defined. Now, it's not the end-all be-all, and we wouldn't put it in ink, but we kind of have a firm sense for how the 1 through 5 is going to look. We might not know who's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, but we know the five, I guess, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
We know who the five are likely to be. And keeping six is not a sure thing either. So, mm-hmm. yeah, I would say those are probably the position groups to keep an eye on. Because I don't expect a lot to change in many of the other places. So, and yes, if there's an injury in training camp, things could get mm-hmm. changed pretty quickly.
Here's another one. Punter competition, yeah. everybody. That's one I didn't talk
about.
It's
going to be somebody new. Ooh-hoo. We know that.
Yeah.
Is it Brad Robbins? Is it Jake Camarda? Or is it somebody else?
Oh.
Can't rule that out either. Mm-hmm. We do want to pivot now, though, to a conversation with NFL Network national reporter Cameron Wolf, who joins us to discuss not only a couple of Bills topics in anticipation of the 2025 season, but some AFC East topics as well, and some of the other opponents on Buffalo's schedule. So let's now check in with Cameron Wolf. Cam, I know that we're kind of hitting a dead period in the offseason for the NFL, which is brief, as we all know, but still there are questions out there because people are wondering what certain things are going to look like for various teams across the league. And the one for me, obviously, we suffer from Bills myopia here, but we know the overhaul that the Buffalo defensive line underwent this offseason. They had an influx of free agent talent, Ogunjobi and Hoyt, who are both going to be out of commission for the first 6 weeks on suspension. Then the influx of youth in the draft. So a lot of new faces up front. The talent is tantalizing. Weaving it all together is the big question. Where would you rank that in questions for the Bills going into this season? Because they have a lot of roster positions solidified. This is one where, knowing their rotation, there's going to be a lot of churn there. How do you think it fits together?
Yeah, Chris, it's number one. That, to me, that's the number one question mark for this team. Do they have enough on the defensive front? Do they have enough pass rush? It's really been the question we've had the last few years of the defense just needing a little bit more of a closer coming in. And you mentioned the two defensive linemen that, you know, are suspended early in the year. You also got Joey Bosa, who you brought in to be a finisher, who's already dealing with a little bit of a minor injury. You know, the hope is he's back by camp. But I would be lying to you to say if it's not a concern that, you know, a lot of the eggs that you have kind of put in this basket right now are dealing with a little bit of a question mark early in the season. And then obviously you have Landon Jackson and TJ Saunders that you want to be able to contribute early too. But I'll tell you this, if we can get past September and October and some of those guys come back and Bosa's healthy and the rookies catch up, I do think they have enough talent in that room. You know, I talked to Brandon Bean about this early in the draft period. They went in with the vision of, hey, we need some young guys to complement and build a long-term pass rush bunch. And they think that Ed Oliver and TJ Sanders can run inside together as double edge rushers. I love the idea of that. You obviously paid Greg Rousseau this offseason. And if you can get a healthy Joey Bosa, the potential is there. But right now, the unknowns certainly make it number one on question marks.
You talked about getting through those first 6 weeks with Larry Ogunjobi and Michael Hoyt out of the picture. The Bills have their bye week 7. They don't face the Chiefs till week 9. The first 8 weeks of the season for Buffalo are looking like a nice tune-up in terms of the teams that they're playing. Yes, they have the Ravens week 1, but beyond that, it's looking like the Bills will be able to figure out who they are before facing the Chiefs. You couple their schedule with some of the newness on the defense. What are your expectations, early expectations, for Buffalo's season?
Yeah, I think you hit it on the nose in the fact that you get a little bit of a benefit with the schedule because you want to have some freedom to start off slow, for lack of a better word, if it needs to be. You mentioned the defense of new faces. We haven't even got to the cornerback room where you have a first-round pick and Maxwell Harrison that you ideally want to eventually be a starter. You're bringing back Trey White. You know, you're still shuffling around in the safety room, who's going to be the starter. So there's definitely a lot of uncertainty. So it wouldn't shock me if, hey, the first month of the season, the Bills weren't the AFC contender looking like on defense that we'd hope they'd be. But if you can get past that bye, you can get past some of the early schedule that looks a bit favorable, then you're on the ground running. And so I think, at least in my view, you know, maybe you lose a game or two that people don't expect you to earlier, but we know this Bills team now and going forward will be judged on what they do in January. And so if they have to trade a September loss for a January win, I think they do that anytime.
James Cook kind of quelled concerns when he showed up to mandatory minicamp And then Brandon Bean in a minicamp press conference basically said he expects James Cook to be at training camp on time and said he expects him on time whether he has a contract or not. That perked up all of our ears because we're saying, oh, is there still some dialogue going on there? So I don't know if it'll happen before training camp, but maybe start of the regular season. It seems that there is at least a crack in the door opening there to maybe finding their way to some common ground on an extension.
Yeah, a crack is probably the right word. The door is cracked. It's not completely closed. Look, James Cook showing up for a mini camp was a good sign towards progress and making it through this season without that potential deal. Both sides still want to figure something out. They're just different in the numbers. There's been no significant progress from what I understand since the last time we've talked about this. So nothing imminent. James Cook wants to be paid like one of the best running backs in the league. And, you know, the Bills have a different number in mind. And obviously another year may convince them otherwise. And so I think right now we're probably going to enter the year with James Cook on the same contract. But, you know, never say never. And deals can be done through deadlines. Otherwise, I certainly know the Bills need James Cook, and James Cook knows how valuable he is to the Bills. And so I anticipate this being relatively non-issue once we get towards the season.
Moving on to a team that you know very well in the Miami Dolphins, the Bills will see Miami first in week three for a Thursday night game. What was your biggest takeaway out of Dolphins OTAs and mandatory minicamp?
Yeah, it's a different team. They are, on paper, from what I've seen, less talented than they have been the last couple of years, which is interesting given, you know, some increased pressure on them. They have been undergoing what the players call some sort of culture change, trying to change the leaders they have in the building. Jalen Ramsey is about to be exiting via trade sometime in the next month. They've been working on it for a while. They let go of Javon Holland in free agency. You had Jordan Poirier, who was here in Buffalo. He's not coming back. And, you know, Calais Campbell, Teron Armstead leaving. And they replaced them with a lot of youth. And so they're betting on youth and development to help them through this next stage. Still question marks for them in the secondary on the offensive line. Can their quarterback stay healthy? But their thought is, hey, maybe we can be a little bit closer as a team. And that can help us not wilt in those November, December, January moments as they've had in previous seasons.
Yeah, I found Bradley Chubb's comments pretty interesting, saying we tried to change the culture last year, and for lack of a better term, we were halving it. But to me, this is perplexing, Cam, and I know like you're in that area most of the time anyway. So Mike McDaniel trying to enact a culture change like 3-4 years into his regime just seems perplexing. I would understand if they had, and I realize they're a team in transition to some degree to the comments you just made, but that's something walking in the door day one you want to try to enact. And I'm not saying he didn't try to do that then, but if he did, it seemed rather ineffective. I mean, we saw all the reports last year of players showing up late to meetings, getting fined, and then still showing up late. How big of a potential crisis could this be if this new plan of being more responsible, being more accountable to your teammates, being more accountable to your coaches doesn't take root here in the first half of this season?
Yeah, it's an interesting question. Look, I've been around the building a while. They aren't talking about culture as this buzzword inside the building. It's not something Mike's bringing up, but he's, you know, it's pretty clear they want a different type of player based on the offseason, how it's gone, the guys who have left, the guys they've brought back in. They've had a lot of those conversations about accountability. I think one thing Mike has admitted, you know, Mike McDaniel, is that early on he maybe gave too much trust to his players and wanted to be a player-led organization and how they ran things. And I think he's learned probably by being burned a little bit the last couple of years that he's got to have a little bit more control over discipline, over accountability. And can he change and can the team change in a significant enough way in one offseason? I don't know. I think that's going to have to be results, not words. But there certainly is a huge question mark about this team's toughness. Can they play in colder weather? Can they play in the playoffs? And I think there is at least an understanding that we've got to actively do something to change that. So Different people in the building doesn't mean it's going to be a better season, but that is their plan is, hey, we're going to go younger, we're going to find new leaders, and we're going to uphold ourselves in a different way than we did before. And if we've got to sacrifice some star power, some talent to do that, then that's the risk we're willing to take. And so the Buffalo will see very early whether or not it's the same Dolphins team they've seen in the last few years.
When you look at the AFC East as a whole, you know, the Bills have had some retooling on defense, but look to be in a good seat to contend for that AFC East title once again. You've got the Jets and the Patriots who have a lot of newness to them, but a lot of people feel confident in what the Patriots have going on. That's because of their quarterback and their head coach in Mike Vrabel. When talking to national reporters this offseason, a lot of people have said the Patriots are the team who could maybe push Buffalo a little bit in season. When you hear that, and when the Dolphins may be out of that equation, what is the talk on the inside about the fact that Miami may not be that number two team anymore?
Yeah, it's a good question. It's teams in different trajectories, right? And it's all based off your quarterback, your youth, where you are on the contract. Drake May is a second-year ascending quarterback on a rookie contract, and so they were able to spend a lot more money in free agency, make some splashy moves. I really like Mike Vrabel as the head coach there, building that culture. So I don't know if they're ready this year to be able to challenge for a division title. That may be too soon, but they are certainly a team heading upward. A team that for years to come, Buffalo is eventually going to have to contend with. Miami is sort of in this, you know, this fork in the road spot. They were the ascending team for the last 3 years, and now they've hit a plateau. Are they going to fall down to crater, or are they going to find a way to resurge? And right now, there's a lot of concern that they're going to crater. And so I think that's what you're hearing of different trajectories of the team. If I was still handicapping it, I'd probably say the Bills are the favorite in the division, and the Dolphins are probably second. But it wouldn't surprise me if we see the Patriots have an upswing and challenge the Dolphins for that second spot in the division. And the Jets, for that matter, too, with the new quarterback in Justin Fields and a new head coach in Aaron Glenn.
Last one I've got for you, Cam, because I know you've been working on this story, but, you know, the Shamar Stewart mess, because there's really no other way to describe it at this point in time, with the Bengals. We already know they've got one pass rusher they're trying to deal with, and the word is they are at least talking with Trey Hendrickson's camp about an extension, because he's publicly said he's not playing under his current deal. But the Shamar Stewart thing, like, they got to get one of these guys figured out and fast so they have somebody to rush off the edge week one. I realize there's a lot of time between now and then, but still, we know that the Bengals are not a swiftly acting franchise historically, so how much do you see these two negotiations kind of dragging through the summer and potentially into camp in the preseason?
Yeah, it's a real issue. You know, you don't have two of your most talented pass rushers on the field all spring, and now questions going into July. Let me start with Shamar Stewart, because holdouts for rookies are rare, but they're not impossible. And for this one, just to make it as simple as it is, it's based off a void contract language. Essentially, the Bengals are trying to put a language into the contract that his contract could be voided if he has off the field issues or otherwise. It's something they haven't done before. It would be the first time they're doing it with a first round pick. And so his team doesn't like being the guinea pig for this new trial. They say, hey, let's negotiate. If we're giving you this, give us some more signing bonus money up front, or give us offsets on our deal. And right now, neither side is budging right now, and they're talking precedent, and they're really staring each other down. And obviously it got really messy with Shamar Stewart going public and calling out them trying to win a negotiation before he's even stepped on the practice field. And Shamar's camp, from what I understand, is willing to let this linger through training camp if there is no deal. Right now those are just words, but he does not need to be fined because he's not under contract. That being said, the Bengals signed their first round pick last year, Amarius Mims, on July 22nd, right before training camp. So that's the next deadline. Ideally, the 2-3 days before you get a deal done. But if not, maybe this thing lingers. Trey Hendrickson's a little different. You know, he wants a renewed contract. He is currently under contract, so he could be fined for missing training camp, you know, up to millions of dollars. And so eventually there's going to have to be some bluff there. They've had conversations, but it's been very minimal from what I understand, and definitely not significant progress to say a deal is imminent. So, you know, you got to think that somebody's got to say, hey, we're going to take the compromise deal. And right now there's just no direction. So the Bengals have historically started off really slow in seasons, and this is not something that's helping them in that department. So definitely in my eyes, a big issue for them to be worked out over the next month.
Last one for me, Cam. Take this anywhere you want. What's been your favorite storyline this offseason in the NFL?
Ah, man, let's take it down to Jacksonville. Travis Hunter being a two-way player in college, Heisman Trophy winner, and now trying to electrify a franchise in Jacksonville that honestly hasn't had a lot to be excited about. I think it's so cool. Every time I've talked with executives, they know I touch Jacksonville a lot, and they want to hear about what's going on with Travis. How much offense is he really going to play? How much defense is he really going to play? You know, the Jags have been switching him off day on and day off with offense, defense. He does one each day. So there's like a cool element of what jersey is he wearing today. And he's been excellent so far, like as advertised, even playing less defense than offense, showing that natural playmaking ability. It makes sense why Jacksonville made that bold move to trade up to number two and give up a first round pick to do it. So there's nobody who's done it the way that Travis wants to do it. But I think this is a cool thing about our league, having something that hasn't been done before trying to be done. And I hope he does it. You know, I could see him being a 1,000-yard receiver as a rookie and catching a few picks on the defensive side of the ball. So I just think the rarity of that has made that the most intriguing storyline for me all offseason.
Yeah, good pick there. Cam, thanks for the time. Enjoy whatever downtime you've got left, and we'll probably see you making the rounds of training camp. Appreciate it.
Yes, indeed. I'll see you on camp.
All right, that's NFL Network national reporter Cameron Wolf joining us. We will take a break and be back with more here on One Bills Live, presented by Kaleida Health. It's Buffalo Bills Radio.
It's Mike Shope.
You might be mocking me or you might be staunchly agreeing with me. I can't tell.
I'm mocking you.
And the Bulldog.
What is Fozzie Bear's role in this production?
On WGR Sports Radio 550.
I like the stat from Warren Sharp today. I almost do all the time. He's always got interesting numbers for me. By a huge margin last year, Miami and New England had the highest percentage of run plays stuffed for no gain in short yardage. Way above, like 44%. Of short yard, whatever that is, however that is defined, short yardage runs, stuffed for no gain.
It's always a bad sign when you can't do that when they know it's coming.
Yes, and it feels like that is not an easy fix, but an offensive line fix. Mm-hmm. And it's not something we would necessarily even like realize had happened as teams change their rosters. But if it did, that's a different team on offense. So if you went to the other end of that category and you could just, yeah. I mean, it's also not having Allen, right? Automatic almost on short yardage.
Yeah, you're probably not tush-pushing Tua.
You're probably not tush-pushing Tua. Sam Monson, have you ever heard truer words? Sam Monson, check the mic with us on the West Shore Hotline. Always a pleasure. How's life? How's the podcast?
Yeah, it's doing well. We're busy setting up our new studio at the moment. So, yeah, I went to Home Depot today, got a whole bunch of painting supplies. So that's my life at the moment.
Is this you and Steve doing the actual physical work, the labor?
Yeah, one of us anyway. You don't want Steve doing an awful lot beyond taking advantage of being 9 feet tall.
All right. Well, I can feel your pain a little bit coming through the phone. Well,
yeah, I mean, when I moved over here, a couple of friends from PFF came and sort of helped us put some bits and pieces together. And by the end of the kind of process, we had relegated to Steve to simply placing a screw in a hole for somebody to come along later and screw it in.
It just bring the coffee and donuts or something,
tough,
Steve.
Come on, Steve. Times for Steve.
That's come on. Help us out. At least do something. Well, Sam, I mean, it's kind of random, but just making that point about the short yardage stats, are we not necessarily Bulldog or me or even yourself, but are people taking the AFC East for granted this year in terms of the Bills' chances of winning for it would be a sixth straight year? Are there sort of like maybe traps in this division that are not getting enough attention, or maybe not?
I mean, I think they should still be comfortable favorites of the division going into the year, you know, come on May. But I do think the other three teams represent a really broad range of outcomes. Like the Patriots might have the broadest range of outcomes of any team in football this year, like realistic range of outcomes. They could be terrible again, right? All the fixes that they've theoretically made on paper to the offensive line, to the receiver room, none of them might have worked. It might be the same as last year, where they threw a lot of bodies at that thing a year ago, you know, once they decided to take Drake May at the top of the draft rather than trade down and, you know, amass capital and try and pick out other positions first. Once they decided to draft May, they did draft a bunch more receivers and offensive linemen. And a lot of people liked, you know, two of the receivers that they came away with, and neither of them did anything last year. So, right. You know, that might have happened again. They might, you know, Will Campbell might actually be a guard and not an offensive tackle because of his short arms and his historically small wingspan. And, you know, maybe they haven't upgraded the offensive line. And Kyle Williams, you know, a load of people love that guy as a prospect in this draft, but maybe he's this year's Jalen Polk. You know, it's possible. Or maybe all the things they did are massive successes, and they've catapulted themselves forward in a massive way. And, you know, Will Campbell is a huge upgrade at left tackle, and Morgan Moses is a quality right tackle as a stopgap starter, and Mike Owenu bounces back, and, you know, Garrett Bradbury could be an upgrade. Like, you could paint a picture where all these things work out or none of them do, and that's the difference between, like, the first overall pick in next year's draft and a double-digit win team.
Yeah. How about Diggs within all of that, Sam?
Yes. Yeah, exactly. Diggs, another example where his range of outcomes is all the way from, like, he's the number one receiver they haven't had for a few years to there's a non-zero chance he isn't on the roster when the season starts.
Sam Monson, our guest. So the Bills sort of, you know, again, at the top of the list here when it comes to the AFC East and maybe even the conference overall when it comes to the odds here. What are, to put it a different way maybe, what are their potential pitfalls here, Sam? Like, okay, if New England, for one, hits on its moves and ends up winning 10 or 11 games, then you've got something of a race. What could slow the Bills down, you know, from within themselves?
I mean, obviously, injuries is always the big unknown, the thing that looms over every team every season, that one injury to a key player kind of derails everything. Really, though, I think the Bills have got a pretty tight range of outcomes this year. They should be one of the best teams in the NFL. I think quite a lot would need to go wrong for them to not be a division-leading, playoff-bound football team. And they kind of avoided, I think, the biggest potential pitfall for them in the offseason, which is viewing consistent playoff failure as, like, something radical needs to change. You know, this is an indication of a critical flaw on the team or in the roster or in the approach, and we got to blow it up and go in a completely different direction. I think that they've avoided that so far. You know, they didn't do anything crazy. They kept relatively staying the course, and I think that's the correct approach. Like, I think, you know, ultimately this team is, I don't want to say they've been unlucky, because most of those defeats I think have been fair enough, but it's just the reality of, like, they are a really, really good football team, but they're also losing to other very, very good football teams at the stage of the season where only one, you know, one team can advance. And sometimes that's just the way it goes, unfortunately.
I like that that's where you are on them and their overall, Sam. But it is notable in here. We've talked a few different times here, not to get too loose on tangents about the NHL, the NBA, but the Knicks went further than they'd been in 25 years and fired the coach. The Toronto Maple Leafs got to the second round again and are blowing up the roster, letting key players walk in free agency. And there are other examples. And we sort of wonder, because I'm mostly like you, like, from a distance, you know, we do talk a lot of hockey in here, and for 8 or 9 years been like, keep running it back, Toronto, you're good, you're gonna get there, the door will open eventually. And that's a phrasing that Sean McDermott has used here. We're just keep knocking on the door and eventually it's gonna open. But I don't know, like, you can't just do that forever though. So, but you still think there's enough runway here?
Well, yeah, look, I think sometimes it is indicative of a sort of critical failure. But the most obvious examples where that is true the weakness is the quarterback, right? Like, it is representative of, like, this is the level of that guy, and he's probably not going to go beyond that. And, yeah, maybe if you catch, you know, the absolute peak of that guy's potential, he can go on a run and win four games in a row. You know, you can get the Joe Flacco season, mm-hmm. right, where Joe Flacco wins a Super Bowl. He's not really capable of doing that generally, but the best version of Joe Flacco that's possible was capable of doing that, and somehow the Ravens were able to get four or five games like that in a row, and that won them a championship. 2011 Eli Manning was not representative of Eli Manning. I mean, that was the best version of Eli Manning he had in his entire career, and he managed to string it together for the run to the Super Bowl and defeats Tom Brady and the Patriots. Like, most of the, like, if Eli Manning's Giants or Joe Flacco's Ravens had been where the Bills had been the last few years, and they'd gotten to the playoffs, you know, four or five times in a row, and they just kept losing against better football teams, I think you could reasonably come out of that and say, look, the difference between us and the championship is the quarterback. It's Joe Flacco, Eli Manning. They're just not as good as Tom Brady or, you know, whoever it is that kept knocking them over. But I don't think that's true with the Bills. Josh Allen is as good as any quarterback in the NFL. And so that's not what's causing them to come up short. And actually, in some of those games, you know, Allen has done his job. He's gone toe-to-toe with the opposition. He's done the final drive to put them ahead, and it still hasn't been enough. So I think most of the time, when it is a critical failing, it's the quarterback is coming up short. For the times where that isn't true, I don't know that there is a better alternative than just keep knocking on the door, because the chances are anything you do to blow it up and go in a different direction will make it worse from, you know, being one of the four best teams in football.
Really good. Sam, so there's two areas that are, you know, within this point, the bigger point you're making, where the Bills get questioned or whatever. One is defensively, they took a step back last year, but really went after it. First-round pick Max Harrison will be interesting at corner. They might even hope that he plays well enough in the summer to earn a starting position. But Bosa and Hoyt and Ogunjobi and everything else they did up front, they poured a lot of resources into that. Will that make an important difference for them? And then also wide receiver, they still get questioned. maybe it's our fault. But I think a lot of reasonable people wonder whether they have the talent at receiver to get there, even, you know, considering how close they've come.
Brandon Bean certainly seems to think
yes.
It's your fault.
Yes, he does.
I think they've done a lot of good work on defense this offseason. And in particular, I think it was interesting the way they approached it, because they've signed a couple of guys that are going to be suspended for a whole bunch of time at the start of the season. So this is clearly, it's not a move to be good for the first 6 weeks. It's a move to be good, you know, late in the season or in January when they need it. They've gone for depth, and that's a really good and deep looking defensive line now. And that, I think, could make a difference, because they have had times where they haven't had the push up front or they haven't had the pressure. Hairston's going to be an interesting player to watch and see if he can hit the ground running. Dorian Strong, the other corner they drafted, is another interesting pick, given his skill set. So they will hope that one of those guys can emerge as the starter over the course of the year and hold up his own on that side. The receiver question is interesting, because Brandon Bean's point is entirely fair, right? Which is, look at what we did last year. Why do we need different receivers? I also think it's a fair question to say, why does this team not have anybody that has a natural X wide receiver skill set on the roster? You know, we have a ton of wide receivers. We've got a ton of tight ends. We've got a ton of pass catchers, and none of them fit that box. And what's more is, that would be fine if you just sort of maintained the same guys year on year on year. But new faces have come and gone, and since Stephon Diggs left, nobody has brought in that kind of skill set. And, you know, you might argue that guys like Keon Coleman, I mean, people liked Keon Coleman as a prospect, but almost everybody that did thought of him not as that type of player. And yet as soon as they drafted him, they were saying, no, he'll play the X. That's where he's going to play for us.
Yeah.
And I think based off his rookie season, it's just not really his strength. So I think they're both reasonable cases. Like, he's kind of right to be a little bit annoyed by people keep bringing it up. But I also think it's a fair line of questioning, which is, this is a missing skill set within this offense. Now, you can argue that it doesn't matter, and we're going to overcome that, and we'll still cook and have one of the best offenses in the NFL. But I think it's at least a reasonable question to raise and say, why is this what's happening? Whether or not you're going to do anything about it, at least let us understand why it's been the approach you're taking.
Right. Josh Palmer is someone that they're looking for to do a lot of that. And he is someone that being mentioned, I think, you know, specifically when he was railing about the topic. And to me, like, maybe that works. He does have great separation numbers, but it's never really happened for him. And to me, he's like, you know, they paid him $12 million a year. That's like mid-tier receiver. Like, it's not, you know, indicative of a commitment to, like, a guy that's a number one or anything.
Yeah, and I don't think he's really an ex-receiver-style player either. I mean, mm-hmm. I think he's another one of these players they have that works as a flanker that can do a lot of good things, but doesn't replace what you lost in Stephon Diggs. So it is an interesting group that they have. By the way, Brandon Bean, I think, might be like the most sensitive general manager in the entire NFL. And this is not just because of that. Like, now that I don't work at PFF, I can tell stories. But like, PFF had to change the way they applied grading to free agents because Brandon Bean called up one day, butthurt that we criticized the Matt Khalil signing.
Oh, wow. That's going back, but
had to change is strong.
Yeah. I mean, he threatened to pull business. Like, this was, that wow. was, he was big mad about that.
Wow.
Well, like you said, in terms of wide receivers, you can see both sides, and that's what has made it so interesting, I think, like I speak for myself, to debate and talk about over the years. What's your feeling about Kansas City? Everything with the Bills, you know, the Kansas City is sort of like looking over our shoulders and looming. Do you like their offseason? Maybe not. Getting Rice back seems big. What's your feeling about the Chiefs' season ahead?
Yeah, I think they had a really nice offseason. I think they had one of the best drafts in the NFL. The one question, though, is still that offensive line has the potential to undermine a lot. You know, now you've got kind of a question mark at left tackle. I mean, Jalen Moore is working on a very small sample size of decent play at the NFL level. They've insulated themselves against that to a degree with Josh Simmons, the rookie, but he's coming off a serious knee injury. But now, you know, so left tackle is something of a question mark. Left guard is a question mark because that's now going to be either Kingsley Suamataia, who was one of the left tackle solutions last year, or Mike Caliendo, who I think has shown he's just not a starting caliber left guard right now. You know, Creed Humphrey should be good at center. Trey Smith should be good at right guard. And then Juwan Taylor is sort of always underachieved relative to the money they got him for at right tackle. So all of a sudden, 3/5 of that offensive line could be problematic. Now, maybe the sort of the most likely thing is it won't be 3, maybe it'll be 2. But you know, all of a sudden, like they've really focused on that offensive line ever since that first Super Bowl against the Bucs, where the line fell apart, and it wasn't even really the line; it was the backup line at that point had fallen apart. And from that point, they seemed determined that was never going to happen again. All of a sudden the cracks are there in a way they haven't been, you know, previous to this.
What did Alex Gold tell us, Bulldog? Have the Chiefs not had a different left tackle like 7 years in a row?
Something like that.
AFC championship games, and it's like always a different left tackle, maybe. Does that sound right, Sam?
Yeah, I think there was some stat, like, I don't think Mahomes has ever had two consecutive seasons with the same left tackle.
Okay.
Like,
how about the same question about the Ravens, Sam?
The Ravens, I think, they have one of the best rosters in the NFL, top to bottom. It's difficult to find, you know, weaknesses. I mean, we just pre-recorded a show looking at kind of the best units in the NFL, and like 3 of them are on the Ravens. I mean, they have an elite secondary. They've got, you know, an elite backfield when you look at Lamar Jackson, Derrick Henry, Justice Hill, like the players they can deploy there. I think the defensive front is pretty good. The offensive line, I think, is solid, if not spectacular. The receiving core is similar. Like, this, it's a team without too many flaws.
Baltimore at Buffalo, week 1. Sunday night.
Is there a team out there that you see ascending? We've been talking for years here, Ravens, Bills, Chiefs. We thought maybe Houston last year, at least some thought Houston might be ascending there, and they hit some speed bumps. The Bengals had an uneven year. Maybe they'll be back. Is there someone coming on the rail here that we should be on the lookout for in the AFC, Sam?
I mean, I wouldn't rule out the idea that Houston sort of bounces back this year and has the season this season that people thought they would have a year ago. You know, they loaded up last offseason like they expected to contend, and obviously it didn't happen, and it fell apart. But even, I mean, it fell apart, they still won a bunch of games and made the playoffs. Right. Like, it was a catastrophe by some standards, and it was still good enough to get them into the postseason. And in a funny way, I was kind of more impressed by C.J. Stroud in year two with one of the worst offensive lines in the league in front of him, and how he performed in those circumstances than I was, you know, seeing him kind of fresh into the league and taking people by surprise. If they're able to fix that offensive line, and it's, you know, it's a significant if, they could have a really, really impressive season.
Sam, just a quick thought or two before you go. I'm curious for your thoughts on what the NFL has done again with kickoffs. I kind of think that so one thing they did, which might have seemed like a small thing, was now you can run an onside kick. You have to announce it, but you can run an onside kick at any point when you're, as long as you're losing on the scoreboard, you can do this. And if kickers can't resist, and if coaches don't want them to, touchbacks, and the ball's at the 35 to start a drive now, not even the 30, I feel like the onside kick becomes a little bit closer to not plus EV, but maybe it becomes a little bit interesting. Although I'm saying this, sort of, I guess I'm inherently assuming that there will be touchbacks and there'll be drives at the 35. Maybe not. Do you respect what the league has tried to do with kickoffs? And do you think this year might be like meaningfully different?
This year is what they should have done last year. You know, they were supposed to have the kick coming out to the 35, and then at the last second they kind of balked at that, and they had it further back, and that just led to everybody kicking touchbacks. Like, there was no benefit effectively to not kicking a touchback in last year's NFL, the first year of this kind of new dynamic kickoff or whatever they were branding. This is what it was supposed to look like, where because it's going to come out to the 35, if you kick a touchback, I think you're going to see a lot more returns this year. And that was what they were trying to do in the first place, which is, you know, let's bring the kickoff back as a play, but without the injury risk, without the heightened injury risk. So I think this year you're going to get a much better idea of what it was supposed to look like, and you should see more kick returns, more kick return touchdowns. And yeah, I think you'll probably see a few more onside kicks because of that, but I think it'll still remain an extremely low percentage play, the onside. So I think you're just going to see a massive increase in the number of returns, period.
Good. Right, Bulldog? You're on board. You'd
sure.
Like to see that.
Yeah. I think it ticked up last year, maybe not to the dramatic effect that they could have, like you're saying, Sam, if it went to the 35, but I think it was effective enough that building on it seems like a good idea.
Yeah, I mean, I think it was the right solution. They kind of made it toothless by not having it at the right yard line. I think we saw, obviously, there was a certain tick up in returns, but I think now you're going to see a much bigger percentage.
Very good. Sam, stay cool in Cincinnati. Good luck with all the painting and sanding and all that fun stuff. appreciate your time and your insight, as always.
Thanks, guys. Take it easy.
All right, Sam Monson, check the mic for the 33rd Team, his podcast. Great. Now we have the most sensitive general manager in two leagues. Perfect. There's just no reason for it. Like, I remember I was always a Tyrod Taylor fan, on and off the field. I always wanted to stick up for him. Mm-hmm. I thought he was better than he got credit for being, and just liked how he went about things. One year he went to the Super Bowl and talked about how harsh the Buffalo media was, and I was just like, you got to be kidding me. Have you ever been anywhere else? Like, just how, wow. I couldn't believe it. Like, I couldn't believe that he would say that he thought, and you know, I've got one seat at the table and I'm just like always defending him. He wasn't talking about me, I hope. I mean, I can't imagine he was. So why would Buffalo sports executives be so sensitive? Do they even know what it's like in like Chicago?
Maybe not.
For one, I mean, just,
yeah, I don't know.
Really? Adams yesterday, I don't want to necessarily just dive back into that, but just incredible, right? Like, I feel sorry for our fans, the misinformation. A, we might even like the information, the misinformation, because it's better than what you're doing.
Right.
We might even like sort of want to fantasize about that being real, whatever. Right. And B, just like, why obsess yourself with that in the first place? Well, I don't get to decide.
No,
how other people feel.
Right.
I don't get to decide. It's very frustrating. You should want me to.
No, you shouldn't.
Yes.
No.
I already said two times earlier that I think I'd be a good owner.
I'm over here. Over here no commenting, which is tough.
I do think
for a radio show host.
Okay. Some interesting different football things with Sam there. The Sabre stuff is hot right now. The draft starts Friday night. 803-0550 if you want to give us your take on one of these topics. Mike Schoep and the Bulldog here, WGR.
A split that I found really interesting when I was looking at Josh Allen's stats this offseason was that he was second QBR versus zone coverage, ninth versus man. That's not a Josh Allen stat. That's a Bills receiver stat. And it's not bad, right? We're talking ninth overall. But when you're talking about an offense in Buffalo that faces a ton of man coverage, in part because defenses now are so afraid of the run game, it honestly is the kind of thing that is the difference between them making it to a Super Bowl or not. You need one of those skill players to step up as a true 101 man beater, someone who can get you big plays downfield. Maybe it's Keon Coleman. Maybe it's Dalton Kincaid. To me, that has been the missing piece in this offense, because it's not the quarterback that's the reason why they're not getting over the hump.
Mina Kimes on NFL Live on the Bills receivers. They're talking Bills, who of course have a great chance to go to the Super Bowl, win the Super Bowl, final year of Highmark Stadium here, close it out the right way. I think I've been routinely saying they're the favorite for the one seed, and I say that because on over-unders, on win totals,
yeah,
they're tied for the highest number, and like the money line is the lowest value, which means that's they're the favorite to have the most wins. So that'd be the one seed.
I mean, they are right now co-Super Bowl favorites with Baltimore.
Okay.
It's Bills and Ravens. They are the Super Bowl favorites right now. So
pretty good.
They're getting the respect, for sure.
The point Mina makes there is, you know, one that's been made quite a bit by a lot of people, much to the chagrin of some others. But we'll see how it goes. I don't think it'll be Keon Coleman. I think it's more likely to be Josh Palmer that has exactly what she says. You know, a man being
right.
Someone that's going to win down the field in man coverage. So, you know, the thing I think about with this team is, I wonder if a GM ever has an exercise like this. Good morning, Jeremy and Joe. Like, all right, here I am. I'm looking at my roster. Like, if it doesn't work, why? Mm-hmm. What's my most likely reason it doesn't work? And isn't that where your trade deadline trades come in? Last year, they get to 4 or 5 games in the season, and it's, we got to go get Amari Cooper. It's not going to work. This is not going to work. We need somebody else. Amari Cooper comes in. And he was serviceable. He's still not on a team, by the way.
Right.
2 years ago, it's Rasul Douglas. We're going to need somebody else. This is a problem. Who knows where we get to by the trade deadline. But to me, that's what any sort of trade that comes late or signing that happens at this spot is. We see a weakness. You know, you do the best you can. So what is the most likely thing to undo them this year? Anybody have an answer on that? Like an obvious answer? They've added a ton of defensive potential.
Potential.
A ton of defensive talent from the draft and free agency. Both were very much keyed toward the defense.
Yep.
What's going to undo them? And don't say, I shouldn't say don't say, because it's an obvious, it's a good answer, but injuries is an answer. But what?
Right.
What
that's every team.
That's every team.
Yeah.
What, if you're looking at the Bills, and you're a Baltimore fan, or you're a Chiefs fan, or a Bengals chart. Like,
right.
Look at the Bills, and you say, like, here's what's going to undo them. What is it? I feel like if we put a poll up on this, the four answers are McDermott. And I don't know what the other three answers are. And that's not even to say that I think McDermott is a top four reason, but I just know it's a popular answer.
Mm-hmm.
Last year, I think one of the things that was available to undo them was what they had at receiver,
The GM does not think receiver was a factor in why they lost. I mean, he pointed to the defense, but they really could have used more help there in that playoff game, and they've gotten help. So I think they're better prepared. What's the thing that undoes them? I mean, the way she laid it out is right. Ninth against man coverage. That's not bad.
But for having Josh Allen as your quarterback, it kind of is. Right?
Well, you'd like to
see
you
shouldn't really be ninth in any facet of passing when Josh Allen's your quarterback. You shouldn't be. You should be top five in everything, at least. Because you're capable of being number one in everything, I think.
Yeah.
With him as your quarterback. So that's a niche thing. Is it such an important thing that it could undo them? It could cause them to lose in a big spot, in a big moment. But I think about their defensive acquisitions and wonder how many of them are going to actually hit as the answer to this question. Like, how much does their defense actually improve from last year to this year? Because if there, it's already started to begin a little bit. The suspensions, I'm not really as worried about, but Bosa already having an injury, and you've got a rookie corner backed up by or competing with a guy that we all kind of thought was pretty shot in Tre'Davious White. So I don't know what my floor at corner isn't that high. So that would be my answer would be what could undo them is that all of those acquisitions in the offseason on defense don't really make that substantial of an impact. Because otherwise, like if I were filling out a poll for that, I think I almost feel like I'd have to put receivers on there. Right? Or I could put, like for me, I've talked about this since the start of the offseason, that there's going to be turnover regression. But is that going to be so dramatic that it undoes them? I don't think it'll do that. Because even though they're not going to have eight turnovers like they did last season, Allen doesn't take sacks, which limits the amount that he's going to fumble.
Yep.
And he doesn't throw as many interceptions anymore. So,
because it's built into the offense.
It's built into the offense because of the more short passing. So, like, I don't think the turnover, the regression comes from Allen. I feel like it might come more from the running backs. You know, they don't all go 8 weeks, 9, 10 weeks without fumbling the football. That probably will happen, but is that going to be the answer? Because that's almost like injuries. That's like, well, this isn't really something you can control. This just kind of happens to teams. So I wouldn't put that on there. I feel like I'd have to put receiver on there. If I'm really trying to formulate four things that could undo them.
And by the way,
it's got to be one of the top four.
Undo them doesn't mean they go 7-10.
No, it means that's how you lose in the playoffs.
Right. That means how did you lose by 4 points?
Right.
How did you lose by 3 points?
How did you lose in the margins to another elite team? That's generally what that means.
Which also could be a coin toss, which, you know, sometimes it's your go-to play that needed a yard got 2 feet.
Yeah, because Mina arguing about the receiver point there, I would not scoff at that at all. Like, I think that's very fair to look at that group and say,
someone's got to come out.
Someone's got to do it.
Which is what we said last year, too. Someone's got to come out of there. And last year, it kind of ends up being Mac Hollins that surprises.
Really, and
Shakir.
We should give credit to Shakir for that.
Oh, for sure.
Shakir did do it. Like, so imagine if he hadn't developed to a level at all where like he could have done where he did last season, because then maybe Coleman plays in the slot or something. Maybe they find their way. Maybe they trade for a slot receiver instead of trading for Amari Cooper and they find their way. But someone else will. You want to be good against man coverage, better than ninth against man coverage. All right, like I'm optimistic about Josh Palmer and Elijah Moore, but they still have to do it the same way I'm optimistic about Bosa and some of these other defensive acquisitions, but they still haven't done it. There are question marks.
Well, as you're going through the defense and like...
It's the defense, for me.
You're not... You don't know how many will hit. How many reasonably have to hit for them to be better on defense? They made a lot of changes.
Yeah.
But the players they lost, they're not really significant players they lost. Rasul Douglas, again, not on a team. Von Miller, not on a team. These things, to me, do matter. That three of the players that they said goodbye to
are not on teams right now. Like Elijah Moore got signed, and that's not an insult to Elijah Moore. It's, you know, you're a player, maybe it hasn't gone as good as it should, but all right, here, let's give this guy another opportunity. The Bills signed Elijah Moore. Here are three players that played roles for a good team in the Bills. Cooper, Douglas for two seasons,
mm-hmm.
and Vaughn, who had good underlying numbers next year when they put him out there. He got some pressures. Like
he did.
For none of them to be on a team, what that gets me to is, how many of these defensive players do I need to hit? If I just told you today, I've seen the future, Max Hairston hits and Michael Hoyt is good. How good's their defense? Really good? I mean, Cole Bishop is out there in the secondary, but I've got so many pieces that are already kind of established. I mean, on my defensive line, I've got a couple pieces I like already. No change from Rousseau, no change from Epinesa, no change from Oliver, no change from Taylor Rapp. The linebackers are intact. Milano might be healthy. Like, that might be different. But how many of these defensive pieces do I really even need to hit to have a defense where I'm satisfied?
I'd want a couple of them at least. Like maybe two or three.
Two. All right. Hairston.
Two
and,
or three.
Hairston and Bosa. How good are they? Great.
They're better. They're better.
Yeah.
Hairston. And that's part of this too. Is there's enough. Well, this guy. Oh, you know, this guy could be. There's enough of those where, if it's more than two or three, and it's like five, like Landon Jackson is ready to play right away, and Bosa's healthy, and Harrison's really good, and hey, oh, Cole Bishop, nope, second year in the system, oh, it does look good. That's what you need to. That's how you get to great. I think great defense, like top five defense in the league, you're gonna need most of those, I think, to be big hits, home runs. And what are the odds? The odds are that probably half of them will, or a couple of them will. Then all of them won't.
Are these home runs relative, though?
What's
a home run from Landon Jackson?
That's what I mean. Like,
he's a contributor. A home run from Harrison is he starts.
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
Home run from Bosa might be a little higher, right? That's maybe
home run from Bosa is
he's getting 15 sacks.
And he's, I would settle for 10 and healthy to start the playoffs.
That's a home run?
That's a home run, yes. On a gamble signing, yeah, a home run is double-digit sacks, which nobody does for the Bills in a McDermott defense because of rotation.
No, only Leonard Floyd, I believe, is the only one.
You could even talk me down off of double-digit. If you told me 8 sacks and healthy for the playoffs.
Yeah, that's really good.
I'd feel like that's a win.
Home run is like as good as you can do, though, isn't it? Isn't home run like that's the best?
But we just established that the home run is going to be relative. A home run for Landon Jackson is not the same as a home run for Max Hairston. A home run for who else? Way down. Jackson Hawes.
What's a home run for?
Their tight end. They're blocking tight end. The home run there is he goes in and mauls dudes, and they're good in the red zone. Versus a home run from Josh Palmer is 1,000 yards.
Right. What's a home run from Cole Bishop?
Not the weak link in the secondary.
Just don't be the weak link.
Yeah, but then who would be? Maybe that's too high of a whatever. Cole Bishop is he starts and he's better than Hamlin, and he's. Mm-hmm. He doesn't have us thinking about the position.
Mm-hmm.
That's a tougher one. That's a good question. But, you know, like Bosa, let's put it up. 8 sacks and healthy for the playoffs. Take it?
99% I bet would say yes to that.
You got to say yes to that.
Honestly, I'm not even sure the sack number matters, right? Isn't it just mostly about... If I told them 4 sacks and healthy for the playoffs, it might be I'd take that. Because it's all about healthy for the playoffs.
4 sacks in how many games? 4 sacks in 4 games? Because 4 sacks in 17 games and healthy for the playoffs.
Right, because at that point it feels like you're not going to expect anything from him in the
postseason. We'll get the real stat nerds in here and like, would you take a pass rush win rate over and healthy for the playoffs? I mean, a home run for me for Bosa is 7.5 sacks and healthy for the playoffs.
Okay. What's a home run for Hoyt? That's a weirder one, isn't it?
5 sacks, 3 interceptions. He's got to do everything.
He's got
2 touchdowns,
12 tackles for loss.
Because he plays all the positions, yeah.
And a receiving touchdown. Because he's going to play a snap on offense somewhere. He's going to be they're going to need to break a record for most players that catch a touchdown in a year, break their own record, and he's going to be the one at the end. So, I don't know. There's a lot of big acquisitions. There's a lot of volume in terms of their acquisitions on defense. And of all those guys we just went through, like, even getting, like, 3 of them, to hit, I still think is, you know, it's not a guarantee. And you still don't have the whale. You don't have the great, great player that can really take your defense to another level, which is why I think they need a lot of these guys to hit. If it was, well, they added all this and Myles Garrett is here, then it'd be, well, honestly, I don't care as much than what Michael Hoyt does for you, and I don't care as much what even Maxwell Hairston does for you, because I think Garrett's going to help everybody do a lot more. Mm-hmm. Whereas now, you don't have that one central piece that the whole defense gravitates around. And for that, then I think you got to have everybody be pulling their weight more than a defense that has a couple of studs on it would.
So I'm at the Bills' single-season sack leaders.
Okay.
Just to give context of, like, wait, you think 7.5 would be good for
Are
Bose?
They all Bruce Smith, by the way?
Well, there's a lot of that. There's some Bryce Pop. There's some Mario. There's some Schoble. But the reason I have it up here is I want to look at single-season sack leaders and then the numbers under McDermott. Because maybe you're thinking, did you just say 7.5 sacks would be a home run for Joey Bosa and healthy for the playoffs?
You actually said 8. He's going down.
I said 8.
He's going down. He's already down to 7.5.
I'll go to 7.5 and say that's a home run. Sack totals while Sean McDermott's the head coach. Leonard Floyd, 10.5.
Okay.
Home run signing, right? 1 year guy, 10.5.
Mm-hmm.
Next, Ed Oliver. 9.5.
Okay.
Next, Rousseau.
Rousseau.
And Vaughn. Vaughn, 8 in 2022. That's in like 10 games.
10 games or something.
And
12 games.
Rousseau twice has gotten to 8. I mean, if Joey Bosa comes in and puts up Greg Rousseau sack numbers,
mm-hmm.
I've got two guys that are that now. I mean, Rousseau just got a big contract. There's lots of things to like about him.
Yeah.
He's young. Man, Bosa getting 8, that's a win. Huge win.
Mm-hmm. You called it a home run, though.
Yes, home run. Home run. Greg Rousseau's career high is 8. If Joey Bosa, off an injury gamble year for... What's his cap hit? His cap hit's like 6 because there's void years on it?
It's because it's 6 because I think next year it's 9.
If they are able to bring a guy in that goes on the other side and gets like Rousseau's sack production, which is, again, what are they signing for? They want the same thing they wanted when they signed Vaughn, but for significantly less money, which is to finish drives, get a pass rush. They did not get a pass rush last year.
No, not really.
Let's Twitter poll that. I say 7.5 and healthy for the postseason qualifies as a home run for Bosa this year.
Mm-hmm. By the way, speaking of while we're on this subject, yesterday Sam Monson, Steve Palazzolo did their breakout players for each team. And you know who they picked for the Bills?
They picked Kincaid.
No, not Kincaid. They picked different players, by the way, at the same position. Different player. Very different. They answered the question very differently.
Is it Keon Coleman and Elijah Moore?
Nope. It's on defense.
Both of them.
Mm-hmm.
Boy. Breakout
on the
players.
Edge.
If somebody said A.J. Epinesa.
Nope.
Rousseau?
Yep.
And?
Palazzolo said Rousseau.
Okay.
He said he's been... What Steve said is that he thinks Rousseau for the last 3 years has been a top 15 edge rusher in the league, and this year he's going to be top 10. That the run defense is already elite and that the pass rush, like this is going to be the year he breaks out with sacks and gets to the quarterback. And then Sam answered the question very differently and he went way deeper and went to Javon Solomon.
Oh, all right.
And said like, they're not even sure he's going to make the team. He's going to beat guys out and he's going to play this year.
And Epinesa's going to get traded?
And I think he mentioned something. I don't know if he said traded, but I'm sure, you know, there's been enough of that on Twitter. So, two guys at defensive end.
All right. 803-0550. Started the segment, Mina Kimes talking about receivers, and then we got to defensive
ends. Never really landed on what the poll would be, though.
I have put
McDermott.
It up.
McDermott.
Would you consider... Oh, sorry.
Oh, no, sorry. Right.
I've
you put up the Bosa poll.
I've got the Bosa poll. Would you consider... Okay. I went to 8. I'm going to give myself an even number. Would you consider 8 sacks and healthy for the postseason a home run season for the signing of Joey Bosa?
This for the original question, though, of like, you put a poll up, 4 options, what could stop them from winning the Super Bowl? What could undo them? And it's not easy to come up with 4 answers. No, it's why they are the co-Super Bowl favorite.
You might want to put they're cursed on there as an option.
Honestly.
It's hard to find a lot.
You wouldn't. You wouldn't. You would say it would be outside things. It would be the Chiefs, right? You just put the Chiefs. That would just win the poll, though, wouldn't it?
I'd be so mad.
You just list other teams that are really good. Listing anything about the Bills, you could say a lack of a star outside of Josh Allen. That's more of a generic thing than what Mina did, which is like picking apart man beaters on offense. But
what would you?
That's kind of it.
What would you do with yourself if a person from the future came back and said, listen, I saw the season. You guys have a great season. You lose in the AFC Championship game to the Chiefs. What would you do?
This year?
Yeah.
Run it back, do it again. We're very well practiced at that.
803-0550, some hockey talk coming up a little bit. Sabres offseason, of course, and tracking rumors, all that. But if you have a thought on Bosa or the assorted home run signing range, I suppose. A lot are voting yes, 8 sacks and healthy for the postseason. Healthy for the postseason is key there. So, give us a ring. 803-0550, 1-888-552-550 on WGR.
That's the stat of the day.
All right, stat of the day is powered by Empire Electric, your residential neighborhood electrician. Visit EmpireElectricians.com. It's a Steelers stat. We love our Steelers stats, don't we?
I love.
File this under.
Because usually they're negative towards.
Yeah, file this one under. Aaron Rodgers is going to make them a lot better. Okay? As much as I might not want that to be true.
Okay.
And I think they might have limitations. Warren Sharp had this yesterday. Mm-hmm. On the Steelers' opening drives last season.
Mm-hmm.
So that is 17 games. Opening drives.
Yep.
The Steelers on their opening drives scored 0 touchdowns.
Wow.
And their opponent's defense scored 1.
That's pretty bad.
So your offense,
that's about as bad as that could
takes
be.
The field 17 times.
Yep.
Gets 0 touchdowns and gave 1 up.
Yep.
A pick 6. What?
Those two guys are still starting in the league, huh?
Mason Rudolph and...
No, well, but from last year? This is from last year,
oh,
right?
Oh, right, so that would have been...
Fields and Wilson?
Yeah.
No touchdowns?
I mean, to not get a single touchdown from Fields and Wilson on the opening drive.
That's what I mean. Like, they were... Weren't they, like, okay-ish? Okay-ish? They were... They ranked 16th in the league in points. But nothing came... Well, field goals, I guess. Another good part of this, though? How much of that is Tomlin kicking field goals in positions where maybe he could have gone for it and scored that touchdown?
That might be right. That might be right.
There would be some instances of that, I would assume. Rodgers has to be better than those two were.
Yeah.
I mean, they weren't that bad. Right, like Fields was okay at the start, and Wilson had like 4 weeks at the beginning where he was pretty good, and then it really slowed down.
They have to be better, and I'll tell you one reason that they're going to be better. Because Rodgers is not what he used to be, but Fields and Russell Wilson are the two worst. I'm almost going to go into history at taking sacks. And the number one thing that kills drives right now in the NFL, like turnovers are all the rage. Everyone talks turnovers. Sacks kill drives.
Right.
Your likelihood of scoring on a drive where you take a sack drops like 20%. One sack, boom, kills drives. And Wilson and Fields are sack machines.
Mm-hmm.
They are number 1 and 2 in multiple sack games in like the last 30 years. I forget all the stats. These all these Steelers stats top of mind. And Rodgers just doesn't do that. I mean, he'll still...
Last year, he took more than he normally does, but he also, like I'm looking right now, last year, Fields and Wilson took 49 sacks.
Together?
And they had 499 pass attempts.
Okay, so like one of every 10 dropbacks is a sack for one of those two.
Rodgers did have 40 sacks, but he also had he had 600 attempts. So he had an extra 100 attempts. So again, 40 was like the highest number he had in a long time, but it was still better than... It was still better than what Pittsburgh had.
And their offensive lines are not created equally. I mean, we'll see if Pittsburgh has a good enough line in front of them. But when it comes to Fields and Wilson, you can isolate it and say, like, these guys, it's not the line. I mean, it can be sometimes the line, but they just take sacks. Wilson and Fields are the opposite ends of the spectrum at Josh Allen. Josh Allen does not take sacks, mm-hmm. and these guys do. If you put them behind the same offensive line with the same – like pressure-to-sack ratio is a great one here.
Right.
What's their pressure-to-sack ratio versus Josh? It's got to be out of this world for the Steelers quarterbacks last year.
I'm sure it's like so. Like I have it by percentage. Like percentage of dropback, Rodgers takes a sack last season only, which was again a bad year for him. Rodgers' sack percentage was 6.4%. Okay. So 6.4% of his dropbacks he got sacked. And again, that was a bad year for him. And Wilson was 8.9%, and Fields was 9.0%.
Yeah.
So even though it was a bad rot, like his other Rodgers years, he's at 5.5%, 5.3, 3.6.
Yep.
That was his MVP year where he had 3.6. And you're not going to find a year like, especially for Fields, man. Fields holds on to the ball, though, a ton.
Mm-hmm.
So, all right, that'll be better. Because otherwise, I was going to ask, but the sack part wouldn't be included here. Would you take what they did statistically last year, which was 3,300 yards, 21 touchdowns, 6 interceptions?
I mean, the Steelers would definitely take that.
That's what the Steelers quarterbacks did last year. But, okay, would you take that with improved sacks?
Yeah.
No, you're not getting the sacks, but I'm giving you 3,300 yards, 21 touchdowns, 6 picks.
Right. It's funny that we don't include sacks in those numbers. We've got our, you know, our tradition of here's a quarterback stat line, but if you throw sacks in there at the end,
yeah.
If there are,
it's a big difference.
If there are 15 added sacks, those are drives that are killed 15 times.
Right. It's 400 yards of sacks.
That's a lot
between the two, almost.
That's a lot.
Yeah.
803-0550. Good morning, Jeremy and Joe here on WGR. Have a Twitter pull up about Joey Bosa. What would constitute a home run season for Bosa and signing? And I asked, 8 sacks, healthy for the postseason. Is that a home run season for the signing of Joey Bosa? What's the yes-no split?
It's going to be 80% yes and 20% no.
It's 88% yes. Yes, that's a home run. 8 sacks and healthy for the postseason. That's having Rousseau's sack numbers of the last, well, his career high, 8.
Mm-hmm.
And if, let me tell you, if Rousseau had like 12 and Bosa had 8, we would easily say, well, okay, maybe Rousseau got more because more pressure, more the defensive line, the interior is getting more pressure. Like, you know, they work as a unit. Their pressure package is one of the things we talked about with Joe Marino a couple weeks ago, talking about what they did at minicamp and how they're going to change how they play on defense. But, yeah, I mean, if you're thinking 8 sacks and a healthy for the postseason is not a home run, like you have some standards. The guy, one thing I looked up, who's the biggest pass rush free agent signed this offseason? Like Garrett didn't move, Crosby didn't move.
Uh-huh.
Who's the biggest name that moved?
Metcalf. On defense?
Defense. The guy who's going to get sacks. Is it Josh Sweat?
Josh Sweat.
You know how many sacks he had last year?
How many?
8.
8?
8.
How many even the Super Bowl, though?
8.
it felt like it was.
But Josh Sweat had 8 sacks last year, and he had 6.5 the year before.
I think more, honestly, I think really what's happening here is less about the Bosa 8 sack number and more just our definition of home run in this instance.
Well,
because like I would call like 8, I would absolutely take 8 sacks and him being healthy for the playoffs. I might call that a double. You'd take that every time, though, wouldn't you? In baseball, you take a double every single time, and actually it'd be a great result. Isn't home run like the limit of his capabilities? Because what is that?
That's as good as you could ask for.
Okay, so what's a grand slam? Is a grand slam, is that the 15 number?
I mean,
if
we're going to be unreasonable, a home run is only if he gets 5 sacks in the Super Bowl, wins Super Bowl MVP because it's the best possible outcome. Also, he pays everyone's PSLs.
Well,
there's a home run.
I'm saying from what he can do, though. Like, just from him as an individual. Okay. You don't think he can have 15 sacks for them?
I mean,
because I think it's in there. I think it's unlikely because of injuries. But if you look at his production in most years,
It's under 8 sacks in most years.
But for how many games is he playing?
Well, that's got to be in here. That's a part of this.
That's what I mean. And that is why.
How many sacks did he have last year? 5. The year before, 6.5. The year before, 2.5.
Mm-hmm.
I got 3 years of under 7. If he hits a 4-year high,
mm-hmm.
That's got to be considered good.
You want to do that with Josh Palmer? You want to do that with Elijah Moore? Like, they hit four-year highs for their careers as a free agent signing, well, especially for Bosa. Where,
I mean, they're talking Palmer up like he is going to set career highs in everything, aren't they?
Sure.
But not Bosa.
So if Josh Palmer gets 800 yards, is that a, because his career high is like 769.
Uh-huh.
And his numbers are not hard to clear. Really not hard to clear. He had one season where he had more than 40 catches.
Look, I'm just saying, I don't think it's impossible Bosa sets his career high in sacks for the Bills.
Career high?
Yeah.
Which would be 12. Nope, sorry, 13.
13.
He'd need 13. I'm saying it's impossible. 13.
No, I think that's in there. I think that player has it in him. I just think that it's very unlikely because of injury. And that's the reason.
It's not only unlikely because of injury. Isn't it unlikely because of the way the Bills rotate their defensive ends? There's only been one double-digit sack guy, and it's Leonard Floyd.
I wonder what that's going to look like last year. How much was all last year Rousseau playing more because of necessity than anything? Because they did deviate away from that strategy a little bit. Like, Rousseau played 71% last year, which was a much higher number than they almost ever play guys. Like, they are almost always... Go look at Jerry Hughes' numbers when he was their number one pass rusher. Like, it was in the 40s, I think, for snap count. And last year, Rousseau got up to 70. And was that because they just think he's that good a player and they've never had...
Or because they needed to.
Because I would wonder... And, you know, again, that's a good point about Bosa, though, is even if Bosa was showing, hey, I'm healthy and I am dominant out there... Would they ever in any outcome put him out there 70% of the time? Or would they say, no, even if you look healthy and you're not getting injured, I'm not doing it because I don't care. I need you for the playoffs.
Right, because the second half of that is healthy for the playoffs. Would you rather have, here's a point about home run, like 8 sacks and healthy for the playoffs or 15 sacks and not?
Oh, I would take the former. I would take 8 sacks.
You need him in the playoffs. I need to see he can do it.
That's right.
And then get in those games.
Yeah, that's right.
So that's a part of the home run. And again, like the question asks, it's got the context of, this is a player who had a calf strain in camp. We're worried about injuries. He's immediately hurt. Like, okay, hey, whatever you need to do, load manage. He could have 15 sacks if they played him that much. He could also not be ready for the postseason because he picked something up along the way. And they're going to be careful with him. So that's part of the context of why I want to have 8 sacks and healthy. Mark in Tonawanda. Hey, Mark, good morning.
Hey, good morning, fellas. I just wanted to pivot a little bit off of Joey Bosa. I totally agree that 8 sacks would be awesome in a healthy playoffs. I mean, that would be perfect. That would be ideal. But an under-the-radar kind of subpar performance last year, in my opinion, was Taron Johnson. And I wonder with this kind of youth movement, on defense with drafting all these cornerbacks, these defensive backs, that if I think the Chiefs exposed him, I do not think he had a good AFC championship game at all. And I think he really needs to step it up come training camp just to prove that, you know, it's not like the Hoyer Hyde situation where they were obviously slower than and underperformed than they did you know, it was just visible that they lost a step, and maybe, you know, we were a year too late in transitioning from them. But I wanted to listen to you guys and see what you thought. Thanks so much for having me on.
Thanks, Mark.
I think his position makes it a little bit different because I don't think having – if you take a step back in speed a little bit, you know, you're not being asked to cover guys over the top and be your last line of defense like a safety would. But, yeah, I didn't see decline in Johnson last year that would make me think, all right, like this is it, a year or two left. Now, sure, like do I wonder about the future for him? Because he is a player that has taken a beating over the years. The role he is asked to play, he's basically playing linebacker on some of these drives because teams are running up the middle and he's got to slide inside. 28 years old and he's had injuries. Like, sure, I think about it. They did draft the guy also, didn't they, that is supposed to be like his exact skill set, Hancock.
Mm-hmm.
So not to say I'm ever wanting to see a fifth-round rookie have to play, but...
I mean, Taron Johnson, how quickly did he get in? He was a, what, fourth-round pick?
Taron Johnson was a fourth-round pick. And he started...
7 games in his second year, and then 11 games in his third year, and then it was a full-time starter after that. So
803-0550, we're going to break in. There's a New Mexico hockey team that's an expansion team. It's got a name that I actually love. We found it. Mm-hmm. We found an expansion team whose name is perfect, and I hope they pick it. We'll get that in. We'll check in with Paul, Chris Peters on the NHL draft, and also a little more of this Bosa chatter. I think it's a good conversation. I like it. Jeremy and Joe here on WGR.
Bag is open for any and all of your questions at 803-0550, 1-888-550-2550. And we go to the phones and to Jack in Cheektowaga. What's up, Jack?
Hi, good afternoon, guys. My season tickets go back to 1960. And my sons and I just went through the process of committing to PSLs and new tickets in the new stadium.
Right.
And I'm just wondering, and maybe you guys can use your considerable influence, you know, tell them that your viewers and your listeners would like to see the Bills come out on their website with the virtual views that they supply for the current stadium for the new stadium. You know, we were able to see that at the Walker Center during the experience, and they actually gave us the view from our seats there. But now that we're signed on the dotted line and we're going forward with this, you know, we'd like to be able to go in and take a look and have the same facility in the new stadium as we do with the old stadium. We want to see what the view is like, you know, from our new tickets. And they don't have that up and running yet. And I don't know why, because they've had that mock-up out at the Walker Center for probably a couple of years now. Yeah. And they were able to do that exactly, show us what our view was while we were still buyers. And now that we are buyers, you know, I'd just like to see that carry through to the online bill site so that you click on new stadium, you click on your seat location, and you're able to look at it online the way you're able to look at it during the sales process.
I'm going to sign off
and listen.
Yeah.
Hope you have a good vacation.
Yeah, thanks, Jack. I don't think that's an unreasonable request,
and it's been done
by the Bills before. I'm just going to throw out a wild guess here as to why that is not in place now. It's because you still have the older stadium as the existing stadium that they're using now.
People may get confused.
Yeah, and for what's up and online now and active on the site pertains to the stadium we are actually using this season,
True.
Which is Old Highmark Stadium. And I would imagine in pretty short order that web page will get flipped as soon as our time in this building comes to an end. Hopefully after an AFC title game where we advance to the Super Bowl.
Oh, yeah.
But I would anticipate that happening in very short order. And look, I get it. We're all excited about the new place. And, you know, you've got your tickets and maybe you want to show your friends. Oh, yeah, look at this.
Yeah, look at
you just
view.
Go online here. This is what my view is going to be like in the new place. And I get the excitement. Mm-hmm. I totally do. I just think it's a logistical thing as to why it's probably not in place right now. I think it will all come in due time. And, you know, far be it from me to tell you to be patient. But that's my guess as to why it's not functional and ready for you to utilize at this moment.
And it's good feedback, too. Maybe something that we can bring to our people to see, hey, this is something that fans would like. Are you able to get it out there? Speaking of the new stadium, it just made me think of this. It should be online by now because I believe we posted it today. But Deion Dawkins and Osiris Torrance did a tour of the new stadium.
Okay.
It's like a 9-minute YouTube video. It is hilarious.
I'm sure
Deion
it is.
Dawkins was in his tip-top shape form of being himself, of the noises that he likes to make. He was hugging every other construction worker, telling them thank you for your service. So excited about the views and the stadium, saying it was the coolest thing ever. And they staged it as like hey guys, Deion Dawkins and Osiris Torrance, and we're going to sneak into the new stadium. So it's like they're doing this like sneak in operation where they like run across. They're like, nobody's looking, let's get in. And then they get a tour of the new stadium. It's so, 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 so funny.
All right. Well, we'll definitely have to check that out. But yeah, we can certainly pass the word along. And we'll try to find out if that's a heavy lift or whether that's a light lift, you know, based on how the system functions now with the current stadium as opposed to flipping it over to the new one. Let's get back to the phones, and we go to Butch on the east side. What do you got for us, Butch?
First of all, it's so good to talk to my sister from another mister and my brother from another mother. The queen of WGM is Maddie Gabb, and the voice of the Buffalo Bills, Chris Browning. To all the people out there, I love WG, I love MSG, and I love all you guys, and thanks for taking my call. I have a couple things that I really want to tap into, but I think I'm going to start off first with something that you guys did was very important, not just to me, but it was important to my community, and I'm going to piggyback off that with this, but you guys went over on Walden Avenue when you went to St. Luke's Church, and the lady who used to run it, who passed away, was a good friend of mine. She's a very sweet lady who created the whole idea a long time ago. And on top of that, you had a person that I consider a friend who I used to watch come in her little Chevy Cruze, her and Mr. Wilson, Miss Mary Wilson was with you. I used to watch them come on 28 and 219 every day, every game. They used to pull over and hold conversations with me all the time. And it was an honor that she was there with you. And I just want to applaud both of you, and along with the United Way organization, everybody who you work for, along with my good friend who does marketing there at the Buffalo Bills and different resources for the players and things to come out. I appreciate you for coming on the east side on Walden Avenue and St. Luke's Church. I just want to get that out the way first. Now, I really want to piggyback off this. I was sitting in my chair, Browning, and I remember you and Chris always talk about your little yard work and stuff that you got to do.
Yeah.
You'll sit back and figure it out. This is true. This is a true story. Yesterday afternoon, about 5 o'clock, I'm sitting in my chair reading, and I hear this big explosion. And one of the power lines where I was on here on Bailey Avenue just blew up. And, you know, fire was breaking out. You know, people were panicking. But anyway, the point I want to make to this is I would like the same charity that you guys do. Maybe you guys can rally around and get all of the workers like the National Grid and the gas company, and have them on the part with a big, nice tailgate cookout or whatever you want to do. Because a lot of people really don't know the work that they do hands-on that they really have to do. I actually watched this from 5:30 yesterday to 3 o'clock this morning as they put up two poles in front of my house. And it was just amazing. So I want to give a shout-out to the National Grid who came yesterday, and we appreciate on Bailey Avenue side for what you guys do. But now let me just say this, and I'm going. Thanks for taking my call. We got two exciting players that is going to be superstars here, along with Terrell Bernard. But the two cats you guys had on maybe a few weeks ago, I tried to get in, but I couldn't. And that was Dorian Williams, and that's Javon Solomon. I'm going to let you guys know. These are going to be two special players that, looking at a training camp that I'm expecting big things for. I'm expecting big things for the season. But anyway, Bush on the East Side, I love you guys, man. Thanks for taking my call. Maddie, Chris, I love you guys. And you just take care of yourself. Enjoy your little time off and get ready for a training camp.
All right, thanks, Butch. I'll say those are two interesting choices. Dorian Williams is, you know, in a, I don't want to say a glass ceiling situation, because I think it's going to be supremely difficult to unseat Matt Milano. But I've said this a number of times, Maddie. Dorian Williams last year started 9 games, I believe it was 9 starts. Because Milano, as we know, got the injury right before the season started with the bicep tear, and he had to start in his place. So I think it was either 9 or 11 starts last year. And at the end of the season, even though he only made 11 starts, he was still the leading tackler on the football team.
Yes.
I mean,
that says a lot.
That speaks volumes to me, to his playmaking ability and ability to find the football. And this is behind a defensive line that is not going to be nearly as good as I think the one they have assembled now.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe that makes all the linebackers better, but you could do a lot worse than Dorian Williams. And look, I'm wondering, is he so good? Because we hear the coaches say all the time, you want to put your best 11 on the field. Mm-hmm. Is he so good that you decide to play a little more base defense and he is your third linebacker on the field? I'm not saying that will happen, but you can't tell me that those coaches haven't sat in that room and thought, maybe there are situations where we can get him on the field down and distance-wise against a given opponent in a given week, because he is a ball seeker and a ball finder, and he makes plays, and that's difficult, I think, to ignore when he makes as many as he does when he does get a chance to play for you. You want to talk about the other guy he mentioned, Solomon?
Yeah.
That's a much different situation
there. It is a different situation. But I think with bringing in as many defensive linemen as the Bills brought in this offseason through free agency as well as the draft, you have two younger defensive linemen who are working as hard as possible in Javon Solomon and Dwayne Carter. These are two guys who are entering their second NFL seasons, and they see, oh, they just added a bunch of other players to,
veterans
to
and rookies.
My position group. Yeah. I better step it up and figure out what I need to do, what the coaches want from me, and do that to the best of my ability. I think Javon Solomon, at times, he had flashes last year, but then at times, he also showed his youth and how much growing he still has left to do. It'll be interesting to see what that growing was this offseason leading into training camp. Like we talked about yesterday, it is kind of hard to have a true opinion on the defensive players, especially when you're not in pads.
Yeah.
So I'm looking forward to seeing the defense get into pads, because then I think you can really start to see where these guys are at in the development.
Yeah, because when we had him in studio here on the show, Solomon, the number one question I had for him was, there were about a half a dozen almost sacks for you last year. What have you pulled off of that film to make sure this year, when you get those opportunities, those are sacks and not just a quarterback hit or a pressure? You know, you finish the play, so to speak. And it was clear to me in his answer that he had done, like, the own self reflection and research on his own game to have a plan for how to be better at finishing those plays and those opportunities when he got them. Now I want to see him make it happen and put it into practice. So that's what I'm going to be looking for from him, maybe more than anything else. We are up against the clock. Got to take a break here. Mark and Wes Seneca will lead us off, but still taking your mailbag questions at 803-0550. Open lines for you there. More of your phone calls here on One Bills Live next.